La Rui Productions presents The Great Unlearning, a courageous memoir about one woman's bold journey to mend her broken past. Read for you by me, the author, Mary La. In the last episode, I read two stories, Belonging and Fitting In, where I shared how belonging is a basic human need and is fundamental to our sense of happiness and well-being, but I went about it in all the wrong ways. I also gave some credit to my mental health counselor daughter, Emily, who has been a significant contributor to the emotional topics of this book. Since I mentioned her in the last episode, I would like to read the story about her in the book that is titled Treeheart. Along with Treeheart, I will also read the next two stories in the book, On Guard and Learning to Pretend. But first, here's Treeheart. I'd like to introduce my younger daughter, now 29, who has contributed to the potency of this book in many surprising and transformative ways. My daughter says she was born an old lady, which I believe because she has a mature wisdom about her that a master's degree in mental health counseling has only magnified. Having succeeded in the goal of becoming the counselor she didn't have while navigating her own turbulent adolescent waters, she is an advocate for underserved populations at a university where she inspires struggling students while helping them realize their own worth and making the best educational choices. After offering to consult with me about emotional health, my daughter shed some beautiful and relatable light on topics such as self-worth, being enough, shame, identity, coping, self-care, vulnerability, self-sacrifice, and boundaries. Her scholarly and intuitive advice helped me identify and explore core issues that I was writing about. For example, I would ask her questions about how self-worth and shame develop, why people avoid conflict, or what kinds of experiences shape identity. Her answers were always brilliant, to the point, and very practical. This is a child who, at age 5, drew me the scene of her birth on a napkin with a crayon and told me about Isabella, her guardian angel, who told her she would be safe coming into the world. She was spot on as she described the bright lights in the birthing room, the furniture placement where the window was, and the cold air she felt when she was born. And she has been giving me sound advice since she was about 6 years old. One evening when I came home late from work, dinner was going to be delayed, and I was a little irritated. She noticed my frustration and calmly patted the kitchen chair next to her as she lovingly said, "Mom, you sound upset. Please sit down, right here." Once we were seated, she gave me her undivided attention and offered me an opportunity to share what was on my mind. I didn't want to burden this beautiful child with my adult problems, but her heartfelt gesture was enough to make me stop and take a deep breath. With a shift in attitude, I sat down next to her, pulled her onto my lap, wrapped my arms around her gorgeous self, and we proceeded to giggle together about the happy highlights of her day while the pasta water came to a boil. She helped me with dinner, and we got it to the table on time. The world needs the opportunity to hear and heal from what this young woman has to share. Along with my wish that the stories and art in this book provide a service to audiences ready to connect with a deeper truth and hope for healing, it is my plan to share what I've learned about transcending a traumatic childhood in inspiring presentations alongside my daughter, who has helped clarify many of the concepts contained in these pages. Here is On Guard. I went to 2 different high schools in 1 year and was tormented by 3 cholas at the first one. Although they never hurt me, they threatened to, especially after PE class. I would change into my street clothes in a bathroom stall in the girls' locker room, then stay there until I was sure the room was empty. It was the only place I felt safe. Even though I didn't make any noise and held my breath as much as possible, I still feared I would be detected because my heart seemed to be pounding so loudly in my chest. I timed my safe exit by running to my next class and landing in my seat just as the bell was ringing. I always felt the need to be on guard. Their unkind words and body language had such power over me. All it took was one word, a sound, or a mean look tossed my way to make me cower. I felt inferior to them, and they knew it. I spent a couple of months hiding from them, but I knew where they were at all times. I could finally exhale when I saw their big brothers pick them up from school in their shiny Chevy Impala lowriders, bouncing all over the parking lot on their way out to the street with their speakers blaring a type of soulful Hispanic music. The most loud-spoken of the three tormenting cholas wrongly accused me of stealing her boyfriend. At 15, she wore bright red lipstick, heavy eye makeup, and big gold hoop earrings like my mother wore. One day, she rushed me after class, stood toe to toe with me, and rammed her forehead into mine as she threatened to beat me up. All I could do was squeeze my eyes shut and tense my body for the possibility of a blow. I didn't know how to defend myself, but couldn't run away either because her threats were paralyzing. I had no idea who her boyfriend was. I didn't have one and didn't want one. She probably didn't have any power in her life, so she had to find it at school. I believe I was an easy target because I wasn't like them. Although my family lived in a school district that was predominantly Chicano, I was as white as the snow I saw in National Geographic. I finally told my father about the Chola bullies at school, and he had me transferred to a different high school without question, or any discussion on how to communicate with difficult people. But the new high school was full of surfers and stoners, so I was headed for trouble. My fear of getting vicious attention from the cholas, or anyone else for that matter, hung around my neck like a heavy weight for the next 30 years and manifested in painfully unexpected ways. With very few boundaries, I set out to belong to whomever would have me. My ache for a sense of inclusion leaned me into anybody or any group that welcomed me and gave me attention. I set myself up for failure by learning how to pretend to be someone I wasn't, and soon gravitated toward a group of high school kids that liked to cut school, wander around town, and drink alcohol they swiped from their parents' liquor cabinets. Here is learning to pretend. I skipped ahead to the water's edge, then spun my body around in slow, blissful motion. Twirling, arms outstretched, I fingered the cool, salty air of that beautiful March morning as my long blonde hair floated effortlessly around my head, tickling my cheeks as a contented smile spread across my face. As my eyes closed in total exhilaration of the moment, I felt as free as a bird soaring along an ocean breeze. Although I was supposed to be in math class at my new high school, my three mentors at Misbehaving had encouraged me to join them in a beach adventure instead of returning to school after lunch. When one of these new classmates snapped a Polaroid of my joyous moment, I was abruptly pulled out of my happy twirl by the roar of their laughter. As their fingers pointed in my direction, the dizzy smile drained from my face upon hearing their dagger-like comments about how ugly I was in the photo. "Your teeth are so crooked, albino girl." After critiquing the snapshot a bit more, they carelessly tossed it into the street as they walked toward a sandwich shop. Stunned and speechless, picking up the unflattering photo from the gutter, I had to agree with them wholeheartedly. Having confirmed I was ugly, they would of course leave me. Seeing myself in a repulsive light and feeling unworthy of their friendship, this experience colored my life like a dark purple bruise that wouldn't fade for decades. This day at the beach ignited my self-loathing beyond the smoldering embers of the typical adolescent body image issues I had been fanning since age 10. My self-hatred further fueled by bullies and teachers who were careless with their words and actions. The teasing I received for my gangly frame, freckles, poor hygiene, blonde hair, breast size, and painful shyness caused me to feel different and induced a deep sense of shame. I soon developed significant social anxiety and a panic disorder that would nearly flatten me. For the next few years, I learned to dumb down and up depending on the situation I was idling in, a flexibility created by the fear of being rejected and left alone, or worse, disliked. Indeed, I adapted so well I felt like an actress, able to blend in or stand out. In reality, I was a pretender, doing my best to be accepted at all times. At some pivotal moments in my near future, I took some naive, dangerous, and often futile strides to be liked, loved, wanted, and needed. Trudging as blindly as I did through life, I'm surprised I made it out of my teenage years alive. Why did those unkind comments about that unflattering photo have such a great impact on me for decades? If I had good self-esteem like I do now, I would have just blown it off. But those unkind words were confirmation of what I was already thinking. I didn't have a positive self-concept back then, and those comments cemented my irrational thoughts that I was ugly and unworthy. I want to share with you a couple of ways I think being bullied as a child manifested in my adulthood, and still haunt me a little bit now. Growing up, I feared for my personal safety. I was always on guard and lugged around an anxiety-provoking weight in my chest that felt like just another uncomfortable part of who I was. That heaviness was my normal. I had no idea what it felt like to be light and free. Because of this fear, well into my 40s, I would do whatever it would take to not give anyone any reason to be mad at me for fear of being yelled at or picked on. I was a people pleaser, and I still have traces of this pattern. Here's a ridiculous example from a few years back, I'd say maybe 8 years ago. I rented out the downstairs apartment of my house to make ends meet, and I would tiptoe around my house so my presence wouldn't bother or inconvenience my renter. Heaven forbid I would make her mad at me. And even after decades of work I've done on my emotional health, I still have traces of social anxiety that sometimes keeps me from truly relaxing in a group, even if they are close friends. So I still have work to do. I don't think the work ever ends. But when I uncovered how being bullied played a part in my emotional health as an adult, I was able to dig to the roots of my irrational fears and tend to them in loving ways. Writing the stories I read today were part of that process. My healing started when I stopped blaming myself for being bullied. It really had nothing to do with me. I was an unfortunate target and victim of other people's circumstances. What I mean by this is, those bullies were people who might have had no sense of control or power anywhere else but at school, students and teachers alike. They could have been raised in homes without love and support, who probably witnessed dominance from an adult. They might have been abused themselves, or didn't have positive role models demonstrating empathy or kindness. I have since developed compassion for the people who bullied me and let go of my fear of safety that kept me locked in a rigid way of being. I no longer tiptoe around other people, and I finally feel light and free. If you would like to see the self-portraits I created to accompany the stories I read today, you will find them on my blog at mary-law.com. Or better yet, while you are on my website, by the Great Unlearning, there are over 50 surreal self-portraits and stories in there. Visit mary-law.com. If you purchase a book via my website, I will send you an autographed copy while they last, or you can buy it on Amazon. Instead of addressing a listener's question today, I'd like to share a reader's comment I received a couple of weeks ago. I received a handwritten card from a reader in Texas. She wrote, "I was absolutely captured by the Great Unlearning. Your writing is profound, heartbreaking, joyous, authentic, fierce, and tender. I am awed by the thoughtfulness and beauty of your conceptual photography. Each image is poetry. I am grateful for your example of deeper self-reflection to discover lessons that need to be unlearned to allow for healing and growth. Sharing your book with the world is a gift that invites others to more closely examine life, relationships, and everything that makes us human. There is so much beauty and pain in life, and your literary expression holds these opposites in balance." Wow. This card sits in a prominent place in my studio where I can see it every day. Sometimes when I feel weary or wonder if I'm doing the right thing, it reminds me that I'm doing important work for women, even if I never know about the difference I may be making with my stories and art. I sincerely hope I'm giving midlife women courage and permission to take a brave look at what's in their way of freedom from shame and regret, self-love, self-compassion, and to see the beauty and awakening potential in being vulnerable. If you have a question or comment about a story or my art, please email me at mary@mary-law.com. There's a good chance I'll mention your comment or address your question in a future podcast. My website and email address are also in the show notes. And I have a free gift for you. By signing up for my engaging newsletter with inspiring new content, information on upcoming events and future projects, you will receive the audio version of my book of poetry, Fear Means Go, read by me. I also play classical guitar on this recording, as I did for today's podcast. In the next episode, I will be reading the next two stories in my book called Gullible Girl and Girls Like Me, where I will share some of the near-fatal and emotionally damaging decisions I made on the beginning of my journey to numb my pain of desperately wanting to be loved and accepted. This is Mary Law. Thanks for listening.